Okay, now I got a hot mic.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. You're good.
Yeah.
Ready to go?
I want to call this meeting to order. This is the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting for Thursday, May 21st. Roll call, please.
I'm here.
Member Wallace.
Here.
Member Barnidge.
Here.
Member Ogren.
Here.
Member Bright.
Here.
Member Talley.
Here.
And Chairman Waggy.
Here. First item is public comment. Is there anyone would like to address an item that is not on the agenda? And please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, Honorable Board, Ben Fine, Pismo Beach, Director of Public Works for the City of Pismo Beach. I'm just here to let you guys know that today the NCSD declared a Stage 3, which is a severe water shortage declaration. And with that, no new applications will be accepted for construction. Existing applications will be processed with supplemental water. And then there's also a list of other recommended actions, which include no washing of cars, no water for dust control on construction, no filling of swimming pools or spas. All ornamental water features are to be drained. Turn off irrigation systems to minimum irrigate and preserve high-value landscape. Cover swimming pools and spas. Do not use water on exterior surfaces. These are the Stage 2 mandates, and those all still apply. And then the Stage 1, which also applies to fix plumbing and irrigation leaks. Irrigate only between 8 p.m. and 9 a.m. Check irrigation systems monthly. Avoid excessive runoff and mandates and all mandates issued by the State of California. So anyways, I thought the board would be interested in that action that the NCSA took today. They passed the resolution today, and it took effect today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other public comment for items not on the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item, which is meeting minutes for March 19. Any comments, corrections on the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I'll say I wasn't at that meeting.
Okay. We'll have one extension, it looks like. Okay. Any other comments, corrections? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Member Gehring?
Yes.
Member Wallace?
Abstain.
Sorry. Member Barnidge?
Yes.
Member Ogren?
Yes.
Member Bright?
Yes.
Member Talley?
Yes.
Member Chairman Waggy?
Yes. The motion passes with one abstention. There we go. Next item is the operations report. Who's going to give that?
Mr. Kessler. And before we get too far in the meeting, I wanted to introduce someone in the audience, Andrea Montes, if you can say hi to everyone. She's with our utilities division. And a couple of years, Zone 3 has always been run by the utilities division. And
right.
A few years ago, I stepped in from our administrative division within Public Works to be the secretary. And this last meeting and the agenda development, Andrea shadowed me and will most likely, within the next few meetings, take over as secretary for Zone 3.
Okay.
She's mm-hmm. going to do a really good job.
Mm-hmm. Great. Welcome.
That's it. We can move on to the operations report. Who's Craig Kessler from the plant.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Current lake elevation is 477.30. Current storage acre feet is 18,488. Capacity is 37.5%. Rainfall to date is 10.75 inches. The plant is currently producing 3.2 MGD. Downstream release is 2.1 MGD. And state water is 2.0 MGD coming into the Clearwater Reservoir. That's 1 million gallons per day. That's all I have. If you have any questions.
Any questions on the operations report?
Thank you.
Any members of the public operations report? Seeing none. This is just a report, no action necessary. Next item is information items. Number 5A, climate update.
Yeah, these slides in your agenda packet show, I guess, visualize what we all already know, that the drought's still here and we haven't had much rain. I like to show this one in particular that shows the state of California and how The drought really started in the central coast of California and has continued to expand out. It retracted a little bit with some of the rain in January statewide, but pretty much immediately went back to 80% of the state as an exceptional drought level. And then as far as forecasts are concerned, it's kind of what we've generally expect in the summer, high temperatures. They're forecasted to be above average, which means more pumping for ag because of evapotranspiration rates and evaporation off of our reservoirs. And then status quo rain, June, July, and August, we don't get much rain, if any at all, so it makes sense that we would be predicted to have average rainfall in those months. And that's it for the climate
update. Any questions? Just a comment, I read a long-range forecast model that said we could be in for a super El Nino next year, but
yeah, I caught that headline too.
Who knows?
Caught that headline too. When that was being talked about last year, I specifically had a slide in a lot of my presentations that tempered that expectation because I believe it's only 75% of the time when we do have an El Nino that it results in above average rain. So
right.
As we experienced last year, they did officially finally declare an El Nino. It took a while, and I think it was February when they finally declared the El Nino based on seawater temperatures, but we never got the rain. So I guess the odds are in our favor this time if we do get the El Nino.
Any public comment? Seeing none. Next item is the Habitat Conservation Plan update.
Yeah, Chairman Mwagi, Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works. We are making good progress, I'm happy to report, on the HCP. E-Corp, who's our hydrogeologic consultant and is updating and revising the reservoir and downstream release model, has been hard at work, and as Gage County staff and I think most of the agencies that are Zone 3 contractors, gathering a ton of information. They are dead on schedule. They've submitted an early draft of their reservoir model, which we have. We are meeting with them and H.T. Harvey, who is the environmental side of an HCP, tomorrow afternoon to review the model, make some basic corrections, and then provide direction to H.T. Harvey and E-Corp moving towards at least a single downstream model by end of summer, along with an HCP that matches that model. And that's our intent, is to have a very narrow focus and scope at this phase of the project and get to that base release program and base HCP release schedule and impact analysis, and then working with the TAC decide how to move forward with that model, whether we need different alternatives, whether we run it on different scenarios, or how we want to proceed with the HCP at that point. But they've made excellent progress of plugging all the information of some 40 years of data into this reservoir model and calibrating it to match actual existing conditions and historic conditions in the reservoir. So we're very pleased with the work so far.
Great. It sounds like we're on the road to finally getting there. I appreciate that. Questions from committee?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
There you go.
You're on.
Thank you. Oh, am I ever. Thank you. Way back when, there was an agency that there was some communication difficulties with. Was it the National Marine Fisheries Service that there was some communication difficulty with? Do you recall? And if not, I guess, are we having any communication difficulties at this point in time?
I guess the answer, at this point in time, no. It's interesting that the staff assigned is promoted up into the agency, although Matt McGugan, who seems to be assigned to it now, has been familiar with Lopez since at least 2008, I think, is when I first met him and gave him a tour of the facilities. When you said communication difficulties with federal agencies, I tend to put all federal agency communications in the difficult category.
True.
So now I'm shifting down into subcategories. I think we really did have concerns in communicating with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Staff there didn't feel like they wanted to engage. There was a lot of handoff going on. Unfortunately, that continues in that agency. The Ventura office is woefully understaffed. and they have narrowed their work efforts down to a very short list of products, mostly related to species listings and litigation at the federal level. So that will be part of our strategy moving forward, is how to engage them. They do have at least one of their local reps is very receptive to us. We work closely on other projects with her. So we're hoping to keep that communication going. But I don't know if I've mentioned before, I think we have in years past, that once we do have an HCP that all the agencies are comfortable with and a proposal and is actually a formal submittal, our intent working with the TAC and then city reps and other agency reps is to have an engagement plan for all of us to reach out for whatever channels we have to try to move this thing through the agency review.
Excellent. Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Go out to the public. Any public comment on the HCP? Okay, see none. Again, I'm pleased. It looks like we've got a contractor moving forward, and the Fisheries Service is kind of working with us now, perhaps better than before. And even though there's a new person assigned, you said that person's familiar with our operation here.
Yes, they are.
That's
very
helpful.
I can remember giving the tour
okay. Great.
Back in the day.
Item 5C, the budget update.
Hi, Jennifer Tomaszewski from Public Works. Attached in your packets is a copy of the third quarter fiscal. Let me start over, sorry. I was more worried about saying my name tonight than trying to pronounce it correctly. The third quarter fiscal year 14-15 report. Expenses are below budget by approximately 20%. In your handout, there are three graphs reflecting the third quarter budget versus actual. The first graph represents routine operations and maintenance. As of third quarter, we're pretty much right on. We're about $8,000 below budget for third quarter. And we do anticipate that we will be under budget by year-end as well. The second graph represents non-routine operations and maintenance, which, again, usually is made up of HCP and pigging efforts, and this is the same. We estimate that we'll spend about $50,000 more on HCP by year-end, and everything else will be rolled over into the new budget and spent by next year. Let's see. And pigging... We estimate that pigging will begin in 15-16 with construction efforts through 17-18. The third graph represents capital outlay, and capital outlay is under budget by about 42% or $450,000. This is made up of four projects: the perimeter fencing project, the SCADA system, the sixth rack filtration module, and the Lopez computer replacement project. Jeff Lee is here, and he will be reviewing those individually with each of you. I did send out the first billings for next fiscal year this week, so your agencies will be receiving those shortly, due July 1st. And this concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Any questions or comments from the public?
Jeff Lee was going to ask me how to spell that name.
I'm pleased we're under budget, so we're doing very well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item is conflict of interest memo. Mr. Deed, Mark, you going to cover
yes.
that?
Again, Mark Hutchinson, Deputy Director, County Public Works. At your last meeting...
Oh, I'm sorry. Do we need a motion to receive and file the last item on the budget?
It's just informational.
Okay. Yeah. We don't need a motion to receive and file. Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
At your last meeting, your committee requested that we prepare some information for use by the advisory committee members on the general topic of conflicts of interest. And as a result of that discussion, we determined to bring you back a memorandum that your committee members could use as individual members as a guideline, so to speak, on what sorts of things might constitute a conflict of interest. We did work with County Council to prepare this, and I think it's a pretty good memo, and you know, we're able to use that information with all of our advisory committees with some changes. There are advisory committees that have a slightly different position relative to the powers that they have as a committee. But in general, this would apply to almost all of the advisory committees appointed by the Board of Supervisors. Two things that I do need to note. One, we did work with County Council, and they did remind us that they are attorneys for the Board of Supervisors. And to the extent the county staff is working for the board, for county staff as well, but they are not specifically charged with being legal counsel to our advisory committees, which I found interesting. Second is in the general topic of conflicts of interest, financial conflicts of interest, and it's noted in the memo in at least two places, individual members are the ones who are responsible for determining whether or not they have a conflict of interest. Which at first seems a bit odd, but then as I thought it through, realized those members are the only ones who know the details of their personal finances. So it would be impossible for the county generally or someone other than that person's individual counsel to make that kind of a determination. We did end the memo with a couple of information sources that over the years I've found especially good. One is a conflict of interest handbook that the California Attorney General produces. It's quite well written. Handbook might not be the quite term for it. There's about 300 pages of information there, but a lot of good references. And then the Fair Political Practices Commission, which is the agency that ultimately in California makes determinations about this particular topic, has developed a fairly extensive website, not only with background information, but also with copies of all of the decisions they've made. And then as elected officials, most of you know that you can request an opinion from the Fair Political Practices Commission, a formal opinion, and they post the question and the response on their website, and then they've organized those so they're searchable. So an individual with or without counsel has those references if they have questions about whether or not they might have a conflict of interest on any specific item. So we're hopeful that this memorandum is of some use to the committee, and certainly welcome any comments that you have on it so that we could perhaps tune it up and keep it in the file and then for use with other likely advisory committees that are positioned the same as this particular one is. I make that contrast because the Nacimiento Commission, which is also an advisory committee, has specific powers relative to decisions that they are the last decision-making point, so they have a little bit different situation that they're in.
And as mentioned in here, and we're all aware, our title is advisory committee. We don't have budgetary authority per se. Ultimately, the Board of Supervisors makes all those decisions. And just for clarification, committee members, comments, questions?
Kristen? Mark, under the background, I think you left out of Roy Grandy. I think, right?
May have.
I've read it like 12 times. I'm like, I know I'm missing it. I know we're supposed to be in there.
And I have a comment, but no questions.
Go ahead. Are you done?
I'm done.
Okay,
thanks, Ed.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Since I kind of instigated this, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. There was a project that caused me to question this, and as a matter of fact, if Mr. Wallace had been here, I would have asked you, but you weren't here at that meeting. So I really appreciate you bringing this forward because it really does answer all the questions that I had. So thank you very kindly. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other committee questions or comments? Go out to the public. Any public comment? Please state your name.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and thank you, Karen Bright, for bringing this up. I looked into this a little bit myself because I found it interesting, and what happens with conflict and whether or not you can justify it away with an opinion, it's perception. Perception means everything. And what I think, the contract was $24,500. It it didn't go out to bid necessarily. County Public Works Department solicited bids from Cannon and Associates and from the Wallace Group, and the Wallace Group responded. The other, I don't believe, did. The where I think we can avoid these types of things is starting at Public Works, that perhaps they don't solicit a bid from someone who's on a council. And then on the flip side of that, Mr. Wallace probably should not have agreed to perform the work. $24,500 is not going to make or break his firm. He could have let this job go. And I think perception, again, is everything.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, any other committee comments?
Yeah, certainly I want to follow up on the public comment. So just for confirmation, Mark, the purchase order that was in question did not come through the advisory committee?
No, it didn't.
All right.
I think I should explain, too, the Public Works Department, as a general rule of business, distributes requests for proposals to establish standing consultants list. We have various categories of work that we do, various types of engineering, and including environmental financial assistance. We put those out on a periodic basis, sometimes in one very large request for proposals. That is a competitive process. Proposals are scored and rated and ranked. We had, in the particular engineering category that this project fell into, three firms. And standard practice is when you get a job that fits into that category of work, and for this particular RFP, it's work under $100,000, non-federal, because the federal money comes with a specific process. So we send a request for a bid, basically a quote, to all of the firms on the list. Two of those submitted bids, and then they were ranked by the project staff based on pre-existing criteria, and ultimately selected the Wallace Group for that project.
So you followed a well-established procedure within the department in order to pursue this work effort. And I think it's noteworthy that, you know, both Mr. Wallace and Mr. Gehring, as consultants who have worked on, you know, the Lopez project in a lot of different capacities, have a lot of experience, you know, with our system and have provided a lot of very important historical knowledge. And that, combined with this, what appears to be a very well-crafted letter from Public Works and County Council, really should be the guiding light on how we address this issue in the future. So I don't think we need to single out anybody. The action obviously did not come in front of the advisory committee. It went through a well-established process. And both of the consultants on the advisory committee have provided good service to all of our agencies over the years. And that just concludes my observations on this item.
Thank you. Any other comments from the committee? Any further comments? Okay, let's go on to the next item. Item 5E, surplus water update.
I'm on again. So, members of the committee, Mark Hutchinson, Deputy Director of Public Works, 2 months ago at your committee, you heard a staff report and made a motion to declare surplus water in a certain amount, and it was our intention that that declaration would happen in April, as early as possible in the water year. However, as described in my memorandum, that did not occur. At your meeting, Oceano Rep brought up a proposal that they were working on to exchange Lopez water for state water, and it's a retroactive exchange. We discussed that with TAC members, and there was actually quite a lot of interest in doing that when we all looked at the water situation and the effect of the Oceano proposal. And just to summarize that, it does not create any new wet water in Lopez Lake, but rather than have an amount of state water sitting in Lopez, which is available for the state water contractors connected to the system to use in the event the state water system fails to make good on their delivery commitments. By doing a retroactive exchange, that water becomes Zone 3 water. And for the agencies that participate in the exchange, those who have both state water and Zone 3, it goes into their low reservoir response plan individual accounts. So good for those agencies. It sort of goes from in the lake to now they have water they can plan on. The second part of that is when you look at the Lopez delivery contracts, the ability for Zone 3 contractors to transfer water among themselves, as long as it's Zone 3 water, is already established in that contract. It's a straightforward, fairly easy process. So then not only does it turn it into Zone 3 water, put it into accounts for the so far now three agencies who have indicated a desire to participate in this retroactive exchange, it also makes it available at the next step to all of the other Zone 3 agencies, especially those who are not state water customers. Not immediately, but in a pinch, if we really get into a bind, it really lessens the paperwork of trying to get wet water to the right places. Now, in order to make the recharacterization happen retroactively, there's a provision in both the state water contracts and the Zone 3 contracts that says, well, you can request a change in your delivery schedule. That's what we're talking about. And to the extent the district can accommodate it, they will or shall. But then it says you have to make that change in advance of the exchange happening. Well, this is not in advance. The interesting thing, though, is it is a standard legal precedent that parties to a contract can change a provision of the contract one time or permanently if they all agree. Now, we have what are called like contracts amongst all of the agencies. So Pismo Beach's contract looks just like Grover Beach's contract, except for the name on the front and the amount of water. All the other provisions are identical. That, as counsel explained to me, is essentially the same as if we'd all signed one big long contract. So in order to make this happen, we need all the participants to agree to waive that single requirement. So all of the state water contractors have been asked whether they would waive it or not, and all the Zone 3 contractors have asked whether they would waive it or not. I should clarify that for County Service Area 12, that's actually the Zone 3 contractor. There's other folks in the Avila Valley who get Zone 3 water, but they're not technically Zone 3 contractors. But we've let them know what's going on. We also made sure that everyone who has both state water and Lopez has an opportunity to participate, sent out letters, copies of which are in your packet, and then answered questions and discussed this at a special TAC meeting. So at this point, various agencies are considering it, asking questions. I think Oceano, Pismo Beach, and the Avila CSD have all opted in and say we want to do an exchange. And we'll probably have to prorate the amount of state water that we have, but we can do that. And a couple of agencies, like San Miguelito Mutual Water Company, which is state water only, has already signed up and said we have no objection, and a couple others. And then we've gotten verbal thumbs up from most of the agencies, but they have a process to go through, either through their council or their legal attorneys. So we're hoping that by the end of the month we'll have this this issue wrapped up. And the reason we held up on surplus water is because it does change the amount of surplus water, but if the exchange is, surplus goes up. The reason this works timing-wise, because you'll recall a year ago a delay in surplus declaration caused all kinds of problems for people trying to plan their water. We are under the low reservoir response plan, so the amount of water in the lake for those not participating has already been established. They already know, per the LRRP, what they're planning on. The folks hoping to participate, what they know is, I can plan on this being either Zone 3 or state water, but it's the same amount of water. So they, too, can plan to a certain degree. And we'll look at those numbers in the next item, I think. The TAC was very supportive, and several agencies are supportive. So at this point in time, again, we're hoping to have a positive response from all of the folks involved and all of those who have an interest in it. And then we would take this retroactive exchange and the surplus water declaration forward to the Board of Supervisors. If there is, as I said that, I just realized if there's some major change in where your committee was going, then we would need to hold up and come back to the committee first, but I don't see that. I see it as very much in line with where the advisory committee wanted this to move down the road.
basically it makes it more flexible and helps. It seems to me it helps overall, from what my understanding of it.
Right, that's the intent. The idea is that it helps the agencies that are able to participate. It helps them with their water planning immediately. We have a really good technical advisory committee, so we discussed what the possible downside was to non-state water customers and could not identify any. And a couple of the representatives said, well, you know, after studying it, you know, we're not state water, but it's a big zero to us, so if it helps you guys, go ahead. Understanding that in the future, if the drought continues, it could be a benefit to those agencies, but we don't see that, well, this year, certainly not, but...
Okay, questions or comments from the committee?
I just have a few comments, and first off, I want to express my appreciation to Mark and Public Works for getting behind this issue. From the perspective of Oceano and our multi-year drought strategies, as long as state water is delivering 20%, we're in a really good situation, you know, because the county's overall excess allocation is more than five times the local delivery commitment. So in a 20% year, all the local agencies can get their state water allocations. And so it does enhance Oceano's ability to store Lopez water off in future years. And because of our water situation, it's much more likely that the other agencies are going to feel a pinch before we do. And that's where I think the flexibility comes in us working together if this drought continues. So again, thanks, Mark, and thanks for Public Works for helping get behind this and the energy that you've put into it. I also then, it caught my attention because the Tribune article, I think over the weekend, talked about the possible use of PG&E desalinated water from Diablo Canyon. And we've all known that, you know, there's a significant amount of water there that they don't use, but there's not pipes that are immediately available in order to deliver that to other locations. So that's my understanding of some of the work that the county is going to be addressing in the upcoming future. But on state water, we do have the pipes, and we do have the entitlement. And in these dry years when Lopez is, you know, starting to empty, you know, it's not a situation of whether the glass is half full or whether the glass is half empty. The reservoir is more empty than not. Well, then we have storage capacity that if we can maximize our state water deliveries, we have the pipelines, we have the entitlements, we have storage capacity. And this, to me, is the first step in order to make sure that we can move forward in maximizing the importation of water that's very important during the drought. So, again, thank you, Mark, and thanks for Public Works for helping move this forward. And I noticed, Jeff English with Aurora Grande has this on AG's city council meeting, I guess, for next Tuesday. And so I provided an updated letter to him and then had it also Marilyn with Public Works routed around to everybody. It was an electronic one, so I didn't put a date on the letter. But anyways, I sent that out. I think it was on Monday I got it to Jeff for the city of AG's meeting. And, again, want to appreciate everybody's work on this.
Other committee comments?
Yes, please.
Karen?
Well, this still is all very confusing to me, I've got to tell you. But going through it, I was trying to figure out, we are not a recipient of state water. My city, Grover Beach, is not. But I'm just trying to figure out what could be the downside to us. And I, in my limited knowledge, I couldn't see what that could be. And I know that we want to cooperate. I mean, if we're all in this together. And so from my perspective, I have not, this has not come to my city yet, but I believe that it is something that I think that we would want to cooperate with. So as I said, it has not come to my council yet, but I think that we would certainly want to, since there is no downside to our residents, I think we would want to support it.
Other committee comments?
Sure, thank Kristen. You. And so we'll take a look at this on Tuesday night, and I'm looking at it from what I have studied. I'm supportive of it as well, and I think Aurora Grande will be As Karen said, you know, we don't take part. We don't have state water, but it is a cooperative effort. We all are in this together, and I think it's better to have the local water, the Lopez water that's behind the dam. I think that's better for all the agencies involved, because we're all in this together, and we might need it sometime. So, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think since Pismo Beach is a state water contractor, we benefit. But I think the point is, if the state water contractors, subcontractors, benefit, then down the road that would help you ultimately, because we'll be in better shape. So that would ultimately help you, I would think. Was that your point, Mark?
Yeah, that's the theory behind it in the long term.
So I think it ultimately becomes a win-win. Insofar as the state water subcontractors are in better shape, that should help those non-contractors down the road. Kind of, as long as we're cooperating, I think that really helps everyone. So I'd like to go out to the public. John?
Just to let the folks here know, AVLA considered this several times at the CSD meetings. And again, as Mark said, we tried to identify a downside to it to the other agencies who are Zone 3 subscribers, and we really couldn't come up to any problems with it in the future. And I think from the flexibility standpoint that's already been mentioned, any flexibility that we have in bringing in the state water sure gives the other agencies an opportunity later on to be served perhaps by Lopez water. So AVLA did sign the letter and sent that in, so the board there is on record of supporting it.
Thank you.
I actually wanted to say something. You know, I just want to acknowledge the vision of those people who did contract for state water, because it's helping all of us. And that was something that goes back for us a long time, because my dad was very disappointed when some of the local cities didn't sign up for state water. But, you know, now we, all of us, including Ag, I think are benefiting from being able to bring more water into the area.
Appreciate that. I'd like to add, Jim.
I'd like to say that I certainly encourage each of the agencies to approve this retroactive exchange of water, particularly for this year, because of the dire condition that our groundwater system is in. Any time we can bring any other surface water into the system, we can offset groundwater pumping, and that benefits all the agencies within the groundwater system. That said, I want to mention that I think that we should also, in addition to my recommendation to approve this, I think that we should also urge the TAC to finalize a recommendation to us on how this water is to be managed in the future. Because, for one thing, the water in the reservoir that sits up there for a year, some of it evaporates. And we've, in this current calculation, that's taken into account. But that should be set forth so we all understand how that's done. In addition, what happens to that water if the reservoir spills in the near future? So that needs to be dealt with. What happens in very low reservoir conditions? So all of these things, I think, should be dealt with by the TAC, brought back to us with recommendations. It should not hold up this, my recommendation for approval. But we need to hear from them on that. And the other thing, I think, is it might be an opportunity to urge TAC to restart negotiations on the contract. We've let that set aside for quite a while, and this might be a good time to get going on that again. Thank you.
Certainly, in light of all the things going on, I think if I understand that need. No other committee comments. I'll go out to the public at this time. Any public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to us. And in this case, I think, would you like, it looks like you'd like a motion of support, or because some cities
haven't
formally.
I think the agencies just need to go and express support.
Well, on the staff report, I do note a recommendation, and I liked committee member Gehring's follow-up on it as well. So I'll defer to the crafting of recommendation if you would like to, or I can.
I think I'll defer to you, Mr.
Okay, so I'll try to craft one. So I would like a motion in support of staff recommendations, and in addition to request the Technical Advisory Committee to review the coordinated use of state water with the Lopez Reservoir and come back on recommendations for the possible benefit of all the Zone 3 participants. Let's see, Jim, I think you were. That ends the motion as concise as I could make it, but I think yours was better.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, did you want to add anything in on restarting the contract?
The contract. And yes, with a friendly addition there to also restart the contract negotiations for Zone 3.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, so under discussion. Okay, so I have a question. So if the AG Council is looking at this on Tuesday, I think it's probably under consent. Can I go ahead and vote on it with the recommendation as it stands right now? I mean, I don't know if Grover Beach is looking at it or not, or doesn't plan to.
I don't know. I didn't see it on our advanced agenda, but... So I don't know.
We're somewhat of an independent body. I'm not prepared to give you legal advice, but I think when we sit here, we're working collectively as a committee, and I'll make a stab at it. Maybe John can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like we're a committee working together to try to further the efforts of the Zone 3 Lopez Dam
water distribution. So we're working as Zone 3.
So we're currently Zone 3, and I don't think that would commit your city to doing anything. That's my interpretation.
That.
That's how I would take it sitting here. We've already voted yes, but maybe John, do you
have I think that's correct. And it's also the motion was sending some work back to TAC to be discussed. So
to bring it back again.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what you're doing.
I think at this point we're basically making a recommendation of support, direction to staff to continue working with all the agencies to get their buy-in. I think we can collectively say we think it's a good idea as a body without, you know, making any commitments on your individual city, since you have to separately do that on your own or any other agencies involved. So any other discussion? We have a motion to second. Roll call, please.
Sure. Member Gehring.
Yes.
Member Wallace.
Yes.
Member Barnage.
Yes.
Member Ogren.
Yes.
Member Bright.
Yes.
Member Talley.
Yes.
Chairman Waage.
Yes. Passes unanimously. Next item is capital projects update.
That'll be done by Jeff Lee.
Good evening, Jeff Lee with County Public Works. You do have a written report in your package this evening. Just wanted to give you a couple quick updates with regards to the sixth rack. The rack itself has been fully manufactured by the Paul Corporation. We do anticipate that delivery is scheduled for next week. So initially it was anticipated for this week. Looks like it's going to be delivered next week. The other project is the SCADA project, and the panel fabrication has begun. The purchase order for Energy Systems Engineering has been released, and so that they do have approximately 60 days in which to fabricate the panels, and then Canon will be doing the installation upon receipt of those 10 panels. Just a quick follow-up on what Jennifer mentioned with regards to budget. There are some expenditures in the 6th rack and the SCADA project that will reduce the amount of capital outlay, that will use up a good portion of the remaining capital outlay for this year, but both projects are currently under budget or within budget. The perimeter fencing project did realize some savings through the installation of that, and the computer replacement project was right on budget. So with that, the other component of the equipment replacement plan will commence after the start of the fiscal year, or will recommence after the start of the fiscal year, along with whatever projects the board approves in the Zone 3 budget. So with that, I'm available for questions.
Questions, comments?
Yes, please.
Karen?
Boy, I'm busy tonight, aren't I? Yes, Jeff. $450,000, that's a good chunk of change.
Well, if you look at the sixth rack, that itself is approximately a $500,000 item, of which we've paid approximately 50% of that. With delivery of that, we'll be paying the remaining 50%, or actually, I believe it's 40% and 10%. So we do have about another $200,000 that will be expended for purchase of that equipment. And then for the SCADA equipment, that contract was approximately $90,000. So for the fabrication of the panels, that did come in under the engineer's estimate. But between the two of those, that's approximately about $350,000 of the $450,000 remaining in the capital project budget.
So that $450,000 savings is, I'm really pleased.
And like I said, we are going to use a good portion of that with regards to the finishing up the SCADA project and that, but there will be some savings, yes.
You're not supposed to say that part.
Okay, thank you. We are going to have a savings, just not all $450,000.
Well, we appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other committee members? Just a question about the SCADA projects. I recall that supervisory control and data acquisition, which is a way to automate a lot of these functions. Will that help in keeping the staff costs low?
I specifically have not reviewed that. I believe in my discussions with Will Clemens, the finance manager for the county, there would be some potential cost savings for staffing because there would be fewer trips going back and forth between the meter locations.
Basically more efficient operation.
Correct.
Bringing this into the 21st century and have more using knowledge to help control things rather than just having manpower do it.
Correct. And it does also allow for if there is a hiccup or a change in the system, we'll know that much more efficiently, much more quickly.
So you can fix the problem before it gets bad and save some more money for us.
Correct.
Committee member Bright was all about saving money for our
and potentially saving water as well, because in the event of a water leak, there we would be able to accommodate that or get to the correction quicker.
Other committee comments? Go out to the public. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, thank you very much. This was information only, and it's good news we're making progress on these items. Next item is implementation of low reservoir response plan.
Yep, and if you haven't figured it out already, it's the Mark Hutchinson show tonight.
I was going to say it's the Mark Hutchinson show again.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have a PowerPoint for this one.
Oh, great.
You will recall that the low reservoir response plan was developed throughout last year by the TAC, and kudos to them. The more we get into this drought, the more we realize what an excellent document this is. Also, and the TAC's oversight of Water Systems Consulting, who did a lot of work for us as well. Just in by way of review, the Low Reservoir Response Plan does set up municipal diversion reductions based on amount of storage in the reservoir. I believe our current number is around 18,000 acre feet and change at the moment.
But that includes the stored
water. State water. I have the number in front of me somewhere. There's about 800 acre feet of stored state water out of a reservoir of 18,461 acre feet. That was yesterday. So we're working with 17,600 plus or minus.
Okay.
So you will note that we are approaching the 15,000 acre foot level, which calls for a 10% reduction in municipal deliveries. At the same time, downstream release has already been reduced 9.5% to 3,800, and that was triggered last December. These numbers are by water year, so they're in a sense, not a sense. They are effective retroactively from April 1st to March 31st. So last year on April 1st, we were above 20,000. We hit that number, I believe, in December. That dropped the downstream releases 9.5%. For the entire year. However, we did close out that year with downstream releases just over 3,000 due to very close coordination between the farming community and the operators. They were very closely to maintain sufficient flow to supply the farmers with the water they need without any excess past their facilities. This is an important projection, and there's a color, or hopefully a color copy. I don't know if you got color or not, in your packet. These are the projections that our water resources staff puts together. And what you have on the left scale is, it's not so big on this screen, but what you have is the reservoir level. So the red line at the top is a full reservoir, and then on the right-hand scale is, I think, precipitation amounts. The blue bars, the vertical bars, are average rainfall over a select 10-year period that's plugged into the model. And so then those scales go off to the right for inches of rain. And then, of course, from left to right is the time scale, so those are by months. So the big black arrow is where we are on the time scale here in May. You can see the early rains we had there on the left shows in that bar. And then off to the right, what we predict on a 10-year average through the summer, which is about nothing. Then there's a couple of dashed lines. Those are projected in the future. So the green dashed line is what happens if we have average rainfall. The yellow dashed line is what happens if we don't have any rain at all. And you see the yellow dashed line intersects the 15,000-acre foot level. I'm looking on my screen, October, middle of October. So the TAC looked at this and realized that we are planning on a certain amount of water right now, which is the full municipal deliveries, totals 4530, plus the carryover water, and we'll look at that table in a moment, that each agency has. But this thing hits 15,000 acre feet in October. We lose 10% of our entitlement numbers. So the question was, how do we plan our water use over the year, knowing that we might have 10% less water halfway through the year? So after much discussion, which I need to follow up on, their recommendation to your committee is that you invoke this process, adaptive management, which is built into the low reservoir response plan. So you can see up there at the left, the reservoir is less than 20,000 acre feet. The board has declared an emergency that enacted the LRRP. That happened last December. Initial prescribed actions were implemented. That was a reduction in downstream release numbers. And then the TAC has been reviewing hydrologic conditions since that point. And based on their review of the hydrologic conditions and the situation that we may have a reduction in our water accounts, they've identified the need for adaptive management and made the recommendation to your committee. Now we're in the big drawn circle to make that reduction at this meeting, which they would then plan forward on. If your advisory committee does adopt that recommendation, then it does go into effect. Now, this describes a process where it is appealable to the Board of Supervisors, which it is, so any citizen could ask the board to review that, and if that were to happen, then we would take it forward to the board. You may recall that when the Board of Supervisors of the Flood Control District adopted the Low Reservoir Response Plan, they also empowered the Public Works Director to approve variances of any of the numbers by up to 10%, which you notice just happens to match what those reduction numbers are. And that was built in so that this, to be consistent with the contract, the board's handed their authority for contractual items, and there is an item in there for the board to reduce water amounts in the event of a drought. They've given a portion of that to the Public Works Director, and so we would be consistent with that number. So the effect comes out this way, and this entire table is in your staff report, goes from left to right and shows the contractors and amounts used. I should point out all of these numbers, none of these numbers include the retroactive exchange. So if that were approved, what you would see for the participating agencies, PISMO, Grover, and then CSA-12 is Avila CSD is a subcontractor, their carryover numbers would go up by the amount that they exchange. Everybody else's numbers would stay the same, which, again, is part of the elegance of the low reservoir response plan. We can do these kinds of planning in the midst of the drought, and those who are not participating have a very solid understanding of what their account's going to be. This would not affect it. and then that those are involved know what the numbers, in round numbers, generally are. If you do the reduction, note the last two columns to the right, total at 20,000, total at 15. The number that's reduced is the entitlement column, not the carryover column. So taking Arroyo Grande across the top, they, if we do a 10% entitlement municipal delivery reduction, the 2290, they lose 229 acre-feet out of their account. So instead of working this year with 3171 out of Lopez, they'll be working with 2942. But because of the carryover provision, it is still above their entitlement amount in a typical year, so to speak. So that is the gist of the recommendation. Now, we did note at the TAC, in reviewing the LRRP, it's projected, with no rain, to drop below 15,000 acre-feet in October. With a little bit of rain, it stays above. And we're right at the front end of the wet season again. That was another prediction, that this LRRP was going to give us fits, that we'd have to make difficult decisions just in advance of the wet season. If the reservoir goes above 15,000, it automatically restores the 10%, which is interesting. Now, the TAC will be constantly reviewing hydrologic conditions, and so I should warn you, they may come back if you adopt this resolution or this recommendation to reduce. They may come back based on what they see in the winter and say, don't restore it, which would, again, be adaptive management working on it. So the interesting thing about all of this is it does not change the amount of wet water that's in the reservoir. But what it's doing is the agencies are planning ahead and saying, okay, we will, instead of putting that 10% in our accounts, we will leave it in the reservoir and essentially extend it for future years. That's what you're doing, is moving it into a future year, again, for use by the same agencies. That's the best description of what's going on here. So no wet water is lost. By doing the reduction, I guess the best way to describe is to say that we're deferring that water and pushing it ahead into the following year or years of the drought.
It's basically it's an incentive to conserve more water, and we don't lose anything. It gives all the entities more control over that water too, seems to me.
I think that's part of it, and it's also I think, be very open and transparent with the communities that we serve so they understand what we're doing with the water and why it's necessary in this case, by the TAC recommendation, to reduce 10% now. You know, that's a reduction in the midst of a drought, but we're looking at a reservoir, and my slide went bad on me, that if we repeat the last 2 years, which were nearly identical hydrologic years in Lopez, and again, I can't emphasize this enough. We had two almost identical years. Both of them, when you compare it on a graph to the next driest year on record at Lopez, we are at 50% of the water that we got from the next driest year. So we are setting records for dryness in this watershed. If we repeat this cycle, so next winter and the winter after, the reservoir is projected then to hit minimum pool about 2 years from this time with this level of this lack of rainfall.
Sure.
So that's why the LRRP does the reductions and then pushes the water forward.
May I ask a question?
Committee comments, Karen?
Thank you. So then we'd kind of be like banking this water, so to say. It would still be available later on. I'm just trying to kind of grasp the concept here. So the people in Grover Beach are, on average, they reduce their water use by 20%. So we can, at this point in time, reduce our water delivery, certainly by 10%, without really hurting anything. So by reducing our delivery by 10%, we are just delaying or keeping that water back for putting it like in a savings account, or for lack of a better word. It will still be available later on if we need it, or for delivery later, should we not have more rain? Does that make any sense at all?
It does, and that's essentially the idea. You know, a person might say, "Well, why don't but we just leave it in the agency's accounts and everybody agree to ask their community to conserve more. This is more of a way, I think this methodology, the idea would be that it does, you know, illustrate that the agencies are working together, I think I heard that before, to solve this drought as, in some sense, a single entity. I should point out, though, that what's we have to keep in mind is we're looking at Lopez Lake, which is just one element of each of the agency's water portfolio, as we call it, and those are all different. We all depend on three basic sources, some two, some three, but in different ratios and different total amounts. So as the LRP was developed, it was developed very much with that in mind, and so numbers generated that worked for everybody, given that everybody has a different water portfolio situation. So what we don't want to do is reduce the delivery so much that we over-rely on groundwater. That's one of the things.
Right.
What the LRP does for that is the carryover account. So, again, interesting, just using Arroyo Grande because they're across the top of the list. Yes, we would reduce the municipal delivery or the municipal contribution to the water account because it still carries forward by 10%. But we bring with us the carryover number, which is the savings that that city generates on its own. And we'll see, I think, if this drought continues, that those numbers will have some interesting variances. And that's due to everybody's different, you know, that Lopez is a different ratio of everybody's water portfolio. But, yeah, you're correct. No water is lost. We're leaving it in the joint savings account rather than putting it into the individual accounts at this time, as recommended by the TAC.
Very good. Okay, I think I get it. Thank you very much.
Other committee comments, questions?
Yeah, I had a question and then a comment. So at the TAC, was it unanimous or was there did different TAC members have differing opinions or were we
Yes to all of those things. It didn't start out unanimous, and there were different opinions.
But it came together as a unanimous vote at the end?
I'm going to make sure there's no objections from the audience because I was writing all over the place. Jeff's smiling. Ben's frowning. But, yes, it was unanimous.
Okay. Well, I think that's important because that does it's reflective of the dialogue that the TAC is having and looking at it from different perspectives, but then still coming together with a common recommendation. And, you know, the idea is the LRRP is really intended to try to get this water supply to stretch out for a 3 to 4 year period. So the recommendation is important. But as Mark noted, if we don't get any help from Mother Nature, it's going to be dry in 2 years.
Yeah.
2 years. So I think it's important we take this action.
Other committee questions, comments?
Sure.
Kristen?
I'm definitely in support of this. AG citizens are doing a great job conserving, so this won't affect us, you know, reducing those deliveries. But I think it sends a message that that we're leaving the water behind the dam and we're kind of saving it for a, not a rainy day, but
a non-rainy day.
So I think it's a good idea, and I'm in support of it. Thank you.
Other committee members?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I mean, I think it's really proactive, and, you know, now that we are going right into the dry season and knowing where we're going to be, and you know, the thought of how we would make up the 10% when, you know, when we hit 15,000, I mean, that would be very draconian. So I think it's very proactive.
Other committee members? Well, we in Pismo Beach also support this effort. I think we've got to do something. This is a, you know, I'm sure that there's lots of controversy on the best way to do it. I'm sure the TAC had some hand-wringing, but I think it sounded like they all came together, and I think it's a good way to proceed. I'd like to go out to the public this time. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll come back to the committee for a motion to reduce municipal water deliveries by 10%.
I will make that motion.
I have a motion, second.
Second.
Motion is second. John?
Roll call vote. Member Gehring?
Yes.
Member Wallace?
Yes.
Member Barnage?
Yes.
Member Ogren?
Yes.
Member Bright?
Yes.
Member Talley?
Yes.
Chairman Waggy?
Yes. Passes unanimously. Again, I think it's a great step forward. We've making a lot of progress. And I guess what I see is everyone's cooperating to an extent I haven't seen before. I think we've all worked together before well, but I think this drought has forced us to reconsider things a lot more, and I appreciate all the efforts by all the entities trying to come to a common understanding of the best way to move forward. Okay. Pretty much completes our agenda. Future agenda items, anything, any discussion there that staff wants to talk about?
We've gotten a couple off the list, and we're going to try to get towards these, to these this summer if possible.
Okay.
Certainly under 9A, we talked about that one. On 9C, I think the quick update is that the TAC and NMMA met with County Public Works to talk about 9C, and then we're going to be following up in about 5 months' time with the county. And in the meanwhile, the NCMA reps are going to get back together with the NMA reps in order to try to refine the scoping of groundwater modeling. So that is well in process.
Great. Any other committee comments on this item?
I was just wondering, I know that Mr. Ogren had mentioned the desal water from Diablo, and I'm just wondering how would this body have anything to do with that in any way, shape, or form?
Mark Hutchinson again. It's possible. We have a number of county departments involved in responding to the board. They want to report back in 120 days. We need to meet with PG&E. You know, Public Works, we look at a water source, a water need, and a lacking pipeline. So we're working to establish the scope, but to find out how much would it cost mm-hmm. to build a pump station and move that water to the nearest community in need. Los Osos is to the north. Avila Beach is to the south. And the end of the Lopez line is at Port San Luis. So there's some engineering to be done about flow rates and possibilities and whatnot. And that's 7.5 miles from the plant to where the Lopez line is. Immediately cognizant of what the projections show for the reservoir should the drought continue for 2 more years. And as discussed at the TAC numerous times, if the worst happens, our customers, cities outside of Avila Valley, do have two other sources, state water and groundwater, ultimately, as difficult as that might be. Groundwater in the Avila Beach is very, very scarce. CSA 12 is, through their water account or through our water account, taking an approach to try to build a reserve to last considerably longer than some of your cities might need to, because that could be their last gasp, and it has some interesting implications for actually delivering potable water that far out. So one of the thoughts, totally not explored yet, is it possible to plumb that desal water into the other end of the Lopez line, and then how far back up the pipe, meeting minimum needs for communities, can we get it? The engineers will look at me and say, we need to look at that, and then in the next breath they're thinking, running a water system backwards is a bit drastic and has its own challenges. So we'll see how that goes. At the same time, the Board of Supervisors has given us directions to bring back a report on opportunities for desalination. I think they use the term on a regional basis. You may be aware that NAPOMO NCSD, NAPOMO CSD, does have a desal feasibility study on the books, as does the City of Arroyo Grande. So we have a start there. There's also some statewide documents. And then we've been listened to a presentation from the engineers that are in charge of the Poseidon project in Carlsbad, which is the largest desal plant in California, which is due to come online this summer, pending issuance of one more permit, under construction and without a discharge permit at this point. And I think everyone in California is anxious to see how well that plant performs, and especially what the cost numbers are. It is a privately financed and funded effort, and the investors were very careful to site the plant in the optimum location as far as customers and power and water source goes, and then size it at the optimum size to make it run as efficiently as possible. So the next bit of engineering, I think, once it comes up, is to consider how plants that are smaller or larger fare in the efficiency dollars to water produced category. There are some challenges in the county, but we plan to be at the board in an August time frame, giving them an outline of where all of that lies and what, I'll say, opportunities and challenges are with desal in the county.
Smashing. I look forward to it. Thank you.
Other comments on item 9, future agenda items?
Just one comment. It would be interesting to know how our different agencies are doing with their water conservation measures and how their reductions might affect some of the calculations in terms of where we're going on the Lopez demand. We know what we have for entitlements and carryover water, but I don't know if we have gone the next step and maybe looked at the trend and what we're doing for conservation and how that might extend that curve out a little bit.
Appreciate that. Let me go out to the public. Any comments from the public on this item, future agenda items? Seeing none. Maybe it's more appropriate to have that discussion under committee member comments, which is the final item. Anybody would like to start on that issue or other comments?
Well, what John just brought up is that, well, I know that Jeff just gave me some figures that this last April compared with April a year ago, our citizens are using 22% less water. So, I mean, that's huge. So it's amazing. So I'm sure we can do more, though.
We've got to. Baba?
For Oceano, so our number evaluation is 2013 versus 2014. The governor's, you know, doing all the evaluations based on the 2013 number. Oceano's conservation was 10.85% in 2014 compared to 2013. What I don't have is that when the rate increase went into effect in 2011, there was quite a significant conservation that happened even before 2013. But technically from 2013 to 2014, it was about 11%. And then our board recently went through the Prop 218 process, established conservation rates that are based on a targeted 20% conservation. So if the community doesn't hit 20%, we'll generate some additional revenues. And then the by policy, those additional revenues will go right back into water conservation programs like incentive programs for toilet retrofits and those kind of things. So that's been our approach.
Other committee comments?
Yeah, I'd just like to say there's a great article in this last Sunday's Tribune about a local farm and what we're doing to save water. And I encourage all of you to read it.
Does it quote anybody you know?
Yeah, actually, a couple of people that I have the pleasure of working with, and there's a great picture of one of our employees. But John Lindsay wrote the article. It's a good read.
Thank you. I know Pismo Beach, our last council meeting, we talked extensively, a very long period of time about conservation. We're looking at a whole basket full of things to do, and I don't have the numbers top of my head on our cutbacks thus far, but maybe it's something we can bring up next time. But I know we're looking at a lot of opportunities to reduce water, and staff's going to bring us more definitive program back at the next council meeting to move forward on this. So, but I think we already have a lot of programs. I think everyone else has the cash for grass and so forth, low float, waterless urinals and so forth. Apparently, save a lot of water too. So, okay. Any other committee member comments?
Just a little bit of a glimpse on CSA 12, was specifically to Abla Beach. We have a unique issue down there because the water demand is really proportional to the amount of tourism and the number of students that hit the beach and so forth. And the water consumption is going down on the residential side. Mm-hmm. On the residential side, we're using probably about 53 gallons per capita per day, which is reaching a good amount. And when you look at the overall consumption, 7 of our 350 connections use about 50% of the water.
Wow.
So you can see that's the restrooms. And interestingly enough, I don't know if people saw the restroom. Maybe it was in Santa Barbara that was using compressed air to clean the plates before they washed them. Mm-hmm. They saved something like 20% of their water doing that.
Yeah, that was amazing.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know in Pismo, too, I think because of the lack of snow in the mountains, people came to the Central Coast instead of went skiing.
Right, exactly.
And we had a big boost everyone did this summer or this winter and spring because of that. So our commercial use, I think, went up too, although I don't have the numbers in front of me. Any other comments? Our next meeting is tentatively scheduled for Thursday, July 16, 2015 at 6:30 p.m. at the Oceano CSD, and this meeting is adjourned.